Hello, listeners. Yamina here. Welcome to the Dr. GV Sierra podcast. Before we dive into this episode, I have a few announcements to make. First, I'd like to thank you all for listening in every week to these podcast episodes. It's been 4 years since we started recording podcast episodes. Actually, February 18th marks the fourth anniversary of recording our first episode with Dr. Paul Insel. This month, we also launched the Dr. GPCR University program to provide courses and content on all aspects of GPCR research to support our community. To kick off this new initiative, we partnered with Dr. Terry Kinakin, who teaches the course Applying Pharmacology to Drug Discovery. Due to an overwhelming response and demand for this course, we have decided to bring it back later on this year, so stay tuned. To get more information about the Dr. GPCR University and what we do, please join the ecosystem for free today at drgpcr.com. What are you doing on April 22nd and 23rd this year? Join me and our GPCR colleagues for the inaugural Endocrine Metabolic GPCRs meeting taking place in Birmingham in the UK. This event will bring together scientists from both academia and industry to exchange data, technologies, and ideas in the field of GPCRs. Some key topics include the latest GPCR signaling methodologies, metabolite sensing GPCR biology, novel endocrine mediators, and GPCR activation structures. This meeting is organized by BioScientifica and endorsed by the Society of Endocrinology. We are very grateful for BioScientifica for having the opportunity to partner with them. I will be there in person. And we will also have a Dr. GPCR booth. So stop by the booth, say hi, and hopefully you'll enjoy the meeting as well. Mark your calendars for the next season of the Dr. GPCR Symposia. And more specifically, mark your calendar for our first event of this year on March 15th. This first symposium will cover the topic of GPCR activation and signaling. We will have talks. We will also be able to accommodate posters on Zoom using the breakout rooms. You can visit the symposia page, which is already up with the latest speaker information to stay up to date and get to know our current Irish speakers. If you'd like to give a talk or present a poster, please email us at hello@drgpcr.com. We will not be doing poster selection. Everybody is welcome to present their poster. We have 99 breakout rooms, so we can accommodate 99 posters. And now let's dive into this episode. Hello, everyone. This is Yamina from Dr. GPCR, and today I'm very excited to have with me Dr. Aurélien Risk. Aurélien, thank you so much for joining me today.
Hi, Yamina. Nice to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you as well. And this is not the first time we're chatting, although we've met at conferences and I know about Interacts, but I'm very excited to have you on the podcast today.
Yes, exactly. Thanks a lot for the invitation. We have talked many times, and I'm glad now to participate to the podcast.
Thank you so much. I'm very excited. All right, so let's start at the beginning. If you could introduce yourself and tell us who you are and what do you do?
So my name is Aurélien Risk. I'm a co-founder and of Interex Biotech. It's a spin-off company of the Paul Scherrer Institute in Switzerland and also of the ETH Zurich. And we developed a drug discovery platform for GPCRs. And so with the platform, we focus on the signaling pathways, right? So to get more information on the signaling pathways modulated by GPCRs and to identify what is the best profile to get the best efficacy and safety. And to do this, I can go into more detail afterwards, but we combine mathematical models of the cellular pathways, cellular assays, AI, chemistry, computational chemistry. So to identify the profile and then make drugs which will trigger the desired profile in the cell, and that will then translate to the optimal effect. Yeah. So the
Wow.
company is, yeah, sorry.
No, please. I was just
Yeah.
gonna say I see it and I'm like, wow, this is
Yeah.
really cool.
And so I'm a co-founder of the company, and I'm now the chief scientific officer. So we spent many years developing the technology. It's a very ambitious and novel technology, so it required several years to establish it, validate it, test it on different GPCRs and programs. So this we did as also with collaborations with biotechs and pharma companies. And more recently, we applied it on our internal drug discovery programs. Yeah. So we have a program in cancer, and it is advancing well. So we just got very recently efficacy data in animal. And so it is also a very exciting time for the company, as it's expanding towards the next steps. So we are also expanding, and we already expanded the team last year with people with expertise on drug development. Yeah. So not only the drug discovery part, but expanding on that. So it's a very exciting time for the company.
Wow, that's absolutely fantastic. How before Interacts, what were you doing and how did you get to that this point where you actually co-founded a company?
Yeah. So my background is in mathematics and physics, then in computer science. So I did my PhD in France at INRIA. It's a computer science research institute. Very often when I say INRIA, people hear INRA because it's a big biology institute, but it's INRIA, it's in computer science. And so there I worked on developing tools to establish mathematical models of complex biological systems. Yeah. It was a computer science PhD. So I worked in the group of François Fage in France, and I was involved in developing new methods to build mathematical models. Yeah. So in really implementing it in a software. And this was very interesting because while doing that, I had also to test it. So I tested it on several cases. Right? And so for instance, there were cases in applications in synthetic biology. There were some applications in cancer to model the cell cycle, the circadian rhythm. And one application was in GPCRs. So this was so this was a collaboration with a biology group in France from Eric Reiter. He was a postdoc of Robert Lefkowitz.
Okay.
And so he had some data on from the Lefkowitz lab on the angiotensin receptor, and he was starting to build a mathematical model of this, also to use this data. And I got involved in that to help there on the modeling and identifying the parameters, seeing what is possible there. So this was my first application on GPCR. And this is very interesting because, I mean, I didn't know anything about GPCRs at that time, but then I got to learn the signaling, everything, and we had some data from the
Yeah.
Lefkowitz group, and in the end it ended in a publication. So my first publication is as a co-author with Robert Lefkowitz, which I knew later was
Yeah.
very
When
important.
you think about it, it's a big it is a big deal. How cool is that still?
Yes. So, but it was also very important because it was the first experience also in seeing what can mathematical models bring to the understanding of GPCR signaling for me. Yeah. And so this is why then I decided to continue in that field. Yeah.
I think, and I find it fascinating because I feel like it's such a, at least it was for a long time, such a difficult path to get to. So you had the mathematical models, you had all the the computation power, but then on the other end, the biology was lagging because we didn't have the right tools, we didn't have the right assays. And now that it's picking up and it's faster every day, combining both, I find that very, very cool.
Yes, exactly. It's bringing a lot of new information, and I have to say also for me, I mean, as a computer scientist and also as a programmer, what I like is to build software, and then you build something, then you can use it or you can interact with it or play with it, right?
Yeah,
And
yeah.
then it is very similar when doing a mathematical model for a GPCR. You make the model, it's validated and calibrated to data. And then you can use it. So it's like, okay, what would happen if I change this parameter, for example, more receptors or more G protein?
Yeah.
You simulate it. So you can really play with it, right?
Yeah.
And this I see as very important. It might sound stupid, but it's like a toy, right? You play with it,
It is.
and it helps to to have intuitive understanding of these complex systems. So
Yeah.
this is what I find fascinating with it already at first, just using it and playing with it, you can get a level of understanding that would be very difficult without.
Yeah, and I've it comes through that you're enjoying this, and it's really fun, and it's a toy. And then on the other end, or in addition to that, when you have the lab and you can test out what happens if we modulate it and test it in real life in cells, I think it just takes it to the next level, because then you can go back and say, well, wait a minute, this is what happened. This is what was predicted. Hopefully, if it aligns, it's great. But if it doesn't, you can still go back and try and adjust the software, the program, according to what the data, what the real data is, which
Yes.
I think is really cool. This
Yes, yes.
loop,
Yeah.
being able to go back and forth, is just phenomenal.
Yeah, exactly. So it goes beyond just playing with it, of course. It's by making prediction. Well, it's first quantifying what is happening, making predictions, then as you said, testing it, validating in the lab. So there is this loop of interactions. And also, as you said, what made this possible is advancement of the experimental method, right? So to have very good time results data in particular, to this is what unlocked the application of these methods.
Phenomenal. And you mentioned having tested in different systems. You mentioned cancer, and I think there was someone else, and then GPCRs. Why GPCRs for you? What was the differentiating, factor in this project compared to anything else you've done before?
Well, so with GPCR, I saw that it was it was a more direct application, the drug discovery. Right, in synthetic biology, it's very interesting. It's more to research. It's also to build things in the end, but it was a bit farther. I felt it was a bit farther away. So I liked on GPCR that there was a more direct use for drug discovery, and also there are much more tools to create the data. Yeah. And then what another aspect with the GPCR is that so we build a mathematical model for signaling pathways, and the beauty of GPCR is that they this modulate similar signaling pathways. So when we have a mathematical model for one, you can easily do it for another. So you can leverage what you do and apply it on many more. Yeah, but it's for all these reasons, I found it very
No,
attractive to go
I
into. Yeah.
agree, and I think the transferability from one system to another, because and now that you mention it, it's really a nice model or a nice approach. Because when I think about GPCRs in a cell, well, obviously there's more than one GPCR in a cell, but there's also potentially different ratios of G proteins or other signaling elements. But in the end, in most cases, let's not generalize, because we have receptors that don't couple to G proteins, but in let's say classical GPCRs, it's always the same players. Their level might change. But also, I think the chances of being able to apply one model in one system to another are really high. In an abstract way, obviously. From one cell to another, then one organ to another, or one person to another, that's a whole other question, which is why you need to get into drug development and push the programs further.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And in the end, what we do with this mathematical model is to define a new parameters, and this is what pharmacology is about, right? It's to define parameters which are extracted from a test system, which will be predictive of what will happen in different contexts. So this is pharmacology. I mean, it's not something different to apply this strange mathematical method. This is what this pharmacology is about. Yeah. Yeah.
No,
Yeah.
agreed, agreed. So how can we go
Yes.
back a little bit of in time, and I wonder, did you always know that you're interested by software, computer science, mathematics, or when you were younger? I'm thinking here, Aurélien at 15.
Yes, so I liked physics actually even more than mathematics. So I liked also that it was applied. I liked to model things to understand the world in a way, to have equations to understand the world. Yeah, this is what I liked. I was really interested in physics. And then in numerical simulations. It's a bit in the same trend, right? It's to have systems that you can use to model physical systems and simulate them and understand them. Yeah. So this is how I went into computer science and numerical simulations. And actually, I worked also in the field of fluid dynamics. So making numerical simulations of fluid dynamics. So I made software also for that. And this is very similar to then what we are doing in the company now. And it's actually funny. So there is Hiroaki Kitano. He's a pioneer in systems biology in Japan. And he made an introduction in systems biology. And in the introduction, he's describing exactly that. So it's like saying that systems biology, it's a use of mathematical techniques and simulations which are used in engineering, but applying it in biology. And actually, he's using this exact example with fluid dynamics and the wind tunnel. And in biology, so you need the wind tunnel to generate the data to validate and calibrate the model and then be able to make predictions. And in biology, the equivalent of the wind tunnel is cellular assays with time resolved, then you make the model and then you can make simulations.
I love it.
Yeah. So this is, yeah. Or I went to GPCRs, yeah.
I like it. The way I perceive it is that you've always tried to quantify and make models out of your environment, which led you to biology, because at the end of the day, it's interesting and it's fun at the same time. I also want to know a little bit more about what is the inception of Interacts? How did it come to be? And what was that point in the project where you and your co-founders were like, okay, we are at a point where we have to take this out of an academic setting?
Yes, so maybe I can also take it just one step back, because I was working on this software and new methods for modeling in France, and then I wanted already to be confronted to more examples, not just developing the tools but also use it. So this is why I decided to do a postdoc in Switzerland at the Polcher Institute with Gebhard Schertler. And so there I was very fortunate that Gebhard is sharing this vision of the use of mathematical methods for signaling pathways. So he really supported me, encouraged it. He also wanted to get into that, so it was a very good match. And so together we continued to develop these methods first in academia. And using more data, different assays to build these models. And then I have to say, at first I was not planning to do a biotech company. I was thinking I would stay in academia. Then I over time, when building these systems, developing it, validating it, applying it on the different cases, I saw that it could really make a difference, right, to bring new information. And this is when then we decided to create a company to apply it, first to develop it further and apply it on different drug discovery programs. So it was created as a spin-off of the institute, built on the technologies that we were developing there.
Nice.
And
You're good.
yeah, yeah.
No,
Sorry.
go ahead.
And
Go ahead. I can
then
go back later.
so in Switzerland there are quite a lot of programs to support the creation of companies at an early stage. So this is very good. So we did that, and so while doing that, then we get in contact with other people who want to do the same thing. So this is how we built the first team. So I co-founded the company with Luca, who is still in the company, and he has a background in engineering, so he has the same approach. He liked it as well, and he also did a MBA in at the ETH in Zurich. So he was complementing very well my background. It was a very good match to create the company.
The question then, and then you were building these models. You got to a point where it made sense to actually spin off the technology and build a company. Was there any moment where you were thinking about working on other than GPCRs, or how did you end up actually? I remember you mentioned that you had really, you thought that working on GPCRs had the closest to the applicability of the technology and to make an impact. But then when Interacts was created, were you always focused on GPCRs, or where was there a moment where you said, okay, this is what we have to do because XYZ?
We so I always developed in the field of of biology or for drug discovery. I was always focused on GPCRs. I was also involved with some work on a receptor tyrosine kinases, and actually the same approach could be applied there. So it's not only for GPCRs. Again, we saw advantages on GPCRs because it's broad application, right?
Of course.
All these receptors, all these indications, all these tools. So it was in a way obvious to do it there, but it would be possible to do something similar in other targets.
Yeah, no, and you're right. When you have this versatile technology, in theory, you could apply it to anything that could be interesting, that has an impact, but then you can't do everything. So you have to do the thing that has the better chance or the bigger impact there for sure. And this is a Dr. GPCR podcast, so we're not talking about tyrosine kinases, although they're interesting as well, but it's not we're really focusing on GPCRs. Did you, and I have this question for everyone, but in your encounter with numerous GPCRs now, do you have a favorite one? One that, was more difficult or easier to work on and you find fascinating?
So I worked on many GPCRs, I mean the classical ones, beta-2-adrenergic receptors. This was our first test case, also because there is a lot of data. Worked on serotonin 2C and angiotensin receptor. And then in the company, we focused on the chemokine. This would be my favorite. So as a family,
Mine
the
too.
chemokine receptors. And there, so the reason is that, I mean, first, I mean, it's modulating the immune system. So, I mean, already it's fascinating everything it's doing and as a use for as a drug target. But then also when looking at the complexity of the system, this is a very good case to apply mathematical models and get more into the complexity because there are so many receptors, redundancy, and also, I mean, it's chemoattractants. Chemokine receptor. So the receptor will, I mean, they will detect a gradient of concentration. Now, when thinking about it, this is really a complex thing, right? It's
It
not
is.
just the receptor is activated. It's not just agonist. The signal is a gradient of concentration. And so the cell has to detect the very tiny differences in concentration between both sides and, in a way, sense this, integrate that in a response. So it's a receptors and the signaling pathways which will process all this and trigger the appropriate response. So it is a complex system, and it's for this reason, right? But it's that I find it fascinating.
I agree.
And then there's much more than this, right? As you said, there's a typical chemokine receptor, which is not the signaling, but they will shape the gradient also of the chemoattractant. So there is also the interplay between all of that.
Exactly. No, I think it's a fascinating system, and I did my PhD and part of my postdoc, actually my two postdocs on chemokine receptors. So I'm fascinated. I think they're so interesting, and a lot of work that I've done was focused on trying to understand on one receptor how what is the effect of different chemokines that are reported to bind, but also what was the signaling consequence of that. And it's fascinating. And although it was done in HEK cells, some assays were done in T cells, but it's not, it's still such an amazing, I think, field. And as you said, there is a physical consequence. The cell actually is guided to from spot A to spot B thanks to the gradient of that. And when I think about it, I'm thinking my the first paper I read and I presented during a class was the paper that showed that CXCR4, actually the CXCL12, so SDF1 gradient was the one guiding cancer cells for metastasis. And I thought it was so such a beautiful paper, but at the same
Yes.
time, I'm thinking about all the processes that has to happen in order for that for that effect to be completed. It's not one gradient in one cell. You have all the other cells, you have other signals coming and going. And how does the cell recognize that this is the signal I'm waiting for? I have to run through the cascade of signaling and then get ready and move.
Yes,
You
that's
know,
exactly,
I
yeah.
think this
Yeah.
is just really, really fascinating.
Yeah, that the cell will integrate all these signals and take a decision. Yeah. And when talking also with a computer scientist, it's not actually for me, but I see people think as a cell is like an information processing system. And
It is.
so then, yes, and so then it makes sense to use mathematical model to do that. And this, exactly this with the signaling, as you say, when there's all these different signals, and the cell has to take a, integrate all that and take a decision, or it will trigger an effect, right? Based on all this, and yeah, and then with chemokine, it's a complexity in I mean, in space with a gradient in time, it would be dynamic, and in what is in shaping this. But then, when making when thinking about making a drug to do this, it's not just, I think it cannot be. We cannot think about it just about its agonist or antagonist. Will it increase the gradient or decrease the gradient? What would be the effect? Right. And yeah.
No, I think it is. I want to run a hypothetical. Let's say you don't encounter GPCRs or the opportunity doesn't present itself to co-found interacts. Would you be in academia in that case today?
So
From a No, I don't know. I don't know. It's a
it's difficult to say.
hypothetical. It can
So one thing I was really interested in is also in cancer. So actually, when I was looking for different postdocs, I saw different possibilities, and I also talked with a group in systems biology at the Memorial Sloan Kettering in New York. So maybe this would have been something I would have done, and whether it would have led to a company or not, it's difficult to say. I think I would have gone also in a sense, and also in looking at the complexity of complex biological systems applying this method. This is what I would have done for sure. Yeah.
I love it. And coming out of a postdoc directly into a company setting, what are some of the lessons that you learned?
So, yes, so, I mean, obviously we have to, I mean, we have to do much more, right, than when in academia. So we have many different roles. As a small company, we have to do many different tasks. It's not just research or the drug discovery, but it's also in fundraising, in management, in grants. So in grants, maybe it's similar to what would be done in academia, just a bit different grants. But then it's also the focus, right? Or the aim, because I mean, everything as a biotech is to make a drug. So everything that we do is to learn something that we can use directly to make a drug, or make tools to accelerate that, to have more information. Everything is focused on that. And thinking also about more shorter term application. I mean, even with the technology we develop, I mean, it is a long term. What we do, it takes many years. But even then, we have to think about what is the next step. I would say this is a clear difference. Yeah.
No, I agree. I think you're I feel like whenever I spend a lot of time in academia and now being in biotech and being, you know, I also had a detour in sales and marketing and in nonprofit world as well. But I think in biotech, you wear multiple hats. It's a small company. You have to do all sorts of things. I was talking to someone and I think she was the CSO of the company and she said, you know, I'm sometimes a CSO and sometimes a janitor. Empties the trash because you have to do lots of things. But I also think you have to grow up, quote unquote, to the role very fast because things are moving forward. And to your point, planning for the future becomes crucial because you have X amount of money, you have the goal, which will take more than the amount that you currently have, but you have to plan it to get you as close as possible so that when you fundraise again, you can show positive results and then move those forward.
Exactly, yeah. And I have to say, I'm very grateful to the investors we had because they also had this vision for the more long-term development. And to, I mean, we are doing ambitious things and there is also a risk, but it's also to do very different things and accelerate drug discovery. But we are fortunate to have people supporting us in that, yeah.
How many are you in the company right now?
We have 10 people, yeah. And
That's
so it's very interdisciplinary. It's reflecting the technology that we developed. So in mathematical modeling, the signaling pathways, we also have a wet lab to generate the data. So as you said, the loops between the prediction and the lab is very important. So it's critical for us to have a lab generating our own data. Then on the AI side, chemistry and computational chemistry, now more recently on the drug development side as well, yeah. Yeah.
And if I remember correctly, you just got a new CEO who joined you recently.
Yes, exactly. So 1 year ago, a new CEO joined us, Chris Pryor. And this is very exciting. I mean, it's at a time where we are transitioning from pure drug discovery to advancing our internal programs to the IND and clinical trials, so to the drug development. So he's bringing this expertise to do that both on the business side and on the scientific side. Yeah. And, but yeah, so this is why he joined us. And at the same, just after him, we also had someone else, Mark Levick, joined in our board. He was a reviewer at the European Medicines Agency. Was at Novartis also, and CEO of a big biotech company. And he's also bringing a lot of expertise on that with a strong focus also on the toxicity of the compounds to advance them. Yeah.
No, I love that. Can you what no, actually not can you. What can you tell us about the pipeline or how did you get to it? Because I feel like what in the beginning when you started the company, you needed data. So you had the wet lab in order to make sure that the technology works. But if you can maybe summarize the different steps of evolution of the company to today. Just major steps.
Yes. So we developed the technology, so the combination of the mathematical methods and the data from time-resolved signaling pathways. And we first validated it on internally, the beta-2 adrenergic receptor, and then on collaborations with biotech and pharma. Yeah. So we had collaborations with Heptares, with Boehringer Ingelheim, with Lundbeck, with GPCR Therapeutics also. And but maybe I can mention already on the internally on the beta-2 adrenergic receptor. So this was a very important validation. In my sense, it's one of our most important results because what we did is we analyzed just functional data, so signaling data like cyclic AMP and internalization recycling of the receptor. We made a model to which is fitting this, and from that we make predictions on other parameters which are not directly measured. And so, for instance, we showed that we predict the ligand residence time to the receptor, just from the cyclic AMP and internalization recycling. And this was a very important step for the validation of the technology because it means the mathematical model understands well enough what is the influence of the ligand residence time on the downstream signaling to predict that only from the signaling. So that it is able to get more information. So this was the first step. Then we showed that not only the ligand residence time, it's also other parameters on the signaling, and we link that to prediction of efficacy in the patients on asthma. Yeah. So with that, then we did several collaboration with pharma and biotech, and then internally, we started with a chemokine receptor system. So on also with a grant and so collaboration with VU in Amsterdam, so with a group of Roblers. So we are very happy to have this collaboration. They have a lot of expertise on chemokine receptors. And we advanced the programs there in cancer. And as I said, we have just got first data on showing that we have a drug candidate which is improving the infiltration of immune cells in solid tumors.
Wow.
It's very important in combination with immunotherapies. And again, we chose this the chemokine system because of the complexity, and this was a good case for us. And now we see many other targets or classes of targets or combination of targets where there's a strong advantage of doing the same. So for instance, in a metabolic disease area, obviously with GLP-1 and GIP, glucagon receptor, because it's again a complex system. This receptor are expressed on the same cell. You have drugs acting on several, and then they modulate the same pathways. And usually it's looked at independently. And with a mathematical model, it's also, we also quantify what is the impact on one receptor when you touch the other. So it's to better determine what is the optimal profile, signaling profile. Yeah. So this is the direction we are going to. Yeah.
Very, very interesting and timely as well. With predicting the residence time in the beta 2 adrenergic project, were you able to translate that prediction into another system? For example, if you were to, the question is, okay, here's my question. I'm trying to formulate it well. So for the beta 2, you measured cyclic AMP in a kinetic assay and internalization and recycling, and you were able to predict the residence time of that ligand. Would you be able to take this information into a different system where you could correlate the residence time with a therapeutic effect or with the activation of a specific signaling pathway that you might be interested in activating for to get a therapeutic effect of a drug?
Yes, so maybe for your first question, so we did that on other systems. We started on the beta 2 because of beta 2 adrenergic receptor because there was a lot of data. Then we did the same on other systems. So just as a validation, we did it on the CXCR4 receptor also with different ligands. And we showed also that we predict the ligand residence time just from the cyclic AMP and internalization recycling. Yeah. And this is a validation of the model. But actually, what is more important is that we predict also other parameters, right? And so, for instance, we have parameters which quantify the dynamics of the signaling pathways. So it can be that the signaling pathway activation is slow or fast. So it can be slow or fast onset. It can be also it can be sustained or transient. And we have mechanistic parameters which explain this. It's not just observations. So, and these parameters, basically, it's a recruitment of the beta-arrestin, how long the beta-arrestin would stay to the receptor. These parameters which quantify the dynamics of the pathways. And then we showed that in several cases, these parameters are linked to therapeutic efficacy in the patient. And from what we see, it will be different in every case, right? In every receptor,
Of
in every
course.
indication, sometimes it will be the ligand residence time, sometimes it will be other parameters which are important. Yeah. But we see that by having more information, we better predict the therapeutic effect in patients or in animal. And this is, I mean, it's not only us, there is a very big trend on going into more complexity, going into dynamics, so in particular the ligand residence time of the receptor. But as we see it, I mean, this is literally just scratching the surface, right? Just looking at the ligand interacting to the receptor and it's not looking at the pathways. And so
Exactly.
this is what we bring in addition, it's going quantifying the dynamics of the pathways and linking that to the therapeutic effect. Yeah.
I love it. I think it's really cool. And you're right. I think the residence time is one thing, but as you mentioned, being able to quantify, is it a transient, cyclic AMP signal, or is it a sustained signal? How long does it take for the beta arrestin? Which beta arrestin is it interacting with? Where does the receptor go as well? Are all very important parameters. And I wonder then, if you have enough, let's say, cases within a family of GPCRs, will you be able to, let's say you have, I don't know, I'm thinking here about the class Bs because there's 14 of them, if I remember correctly. And then let's say you have enough information on 5 out of the 14, how transferable that information is to the other 10. If you were able to quantify this and to train your system basically on this.
You mean in terms of linking that to the chemistry or how it interacts with the receptor, or
Exactly. So can you generate a mathematical model on the potential patterns that occur within a certain family of receptors that are known to be activated similarly?
Yes. So this is a very important thing as well. So I mean, what we started with is what I described with the mathematical models and the signaling pathways is really at first just quantifying this, right? And then, of course, you can link it to the chemistry of the compounds, how it interacts with the receptor, and try to find some patterns. So, for instance, it has to interact with this residue to have some long residence time or to trigger certain effects on the signaling pathways to have long internalization or something like that. Yeah. And this, it's well, there are many specificity on the receptors, but we see many applications with the machine learning, and there you can also transfer some knowledge from one receptor to the other. Yeah, and this is actually a very important thing that we saw. We didn't start with it, but since a few years we're also doing that. And so there is a very interesting review from Andreas Bender, the professor in Cambridge, on AI for drug discovery and also on GPCRs, but what type of data is necessary to do this, to find these patterns, as you say. Yeah? And in his review, he's describing that in biology or in cellular biology, it's particularly difficult because the data is very conditional. Right? So you acquire the data in different cells or at different time points, it will always be different. So it's very difficult to, or impossible to gather a data set that will be coherent to train a machine learning model and find these patterns. Yeah. And what we saw is that, again, with the mathematical model, it's a tool to remove this conditionality and generate data for that. And I have to say, we did a few applications already in this field, but there are many, many more things to do. In that,
I like that because this is exactly what was discussed. So, we're recording this February 12th, and last week, February 8th, we held the first Dr. GPCR University class with Terry Kinnakin, and one of your colleagues was there as well. And this is exactly one of the questions that we were discussing is you have, the results or the data is very system dependent. And in order to apply any models to it, you need to get rid of the system dependency and be able to express the data in a uniform way so that you can input this in a system.
And this is what this the mathematical models are about, is to take into account more of the experimental conditions of the cell and derive parameters which are independent of the context. And it helps both to interpret the data and also then to create the data sets for AI. It's the same, yeah. So all the challenges which are identified in the GPCR field, so for instance, on quantifying signaling bias, which is either temporal bias or the artifacts from the
System.
assays, it's all the same issues to then generate data sets for AI. Yeah, so when solving it for one, it will solve it for also for AI. And with Terry Kinnakin, I can tell you it's very interesting. So when I started working on GPCR, I didn't know anything about GPCR. It was just, okay, let's apply, develop some mathematical models there. And from the reactions I got and also from doing it, I was thinking I'm doing something completely different. I was describing systems biology, and people think, "What is this strange thing? It's a weird idea to make these complex mathematical models." And then at some point, I read the papers from Terry Kanekin, and I saw what I'm doing is exactly what he did over many years. I mean, what he's describing, it's mathematical models to describe GPCR signaling. And what we do when we say systems biology, it's just some mathematical models which are a bit more sophisticated, a bit more complex, but which are built into what he did. Yeah. So it's just an
Exactly.
extension of it. It's just an extension of the classical pharmacology, everything we do here.
I love it. I love it. And it's funny because the first time I met Terry in person, he was at a GPCR retreat, many, maybe 10, over 10 years ago, and he was getting ready. He remembers it differently, but it was interesting because that was the meeting where Brian Kobilka was presenting the structure of a GS bound GPCR. So everybody wanted to hear Brian. The talk was great, and but Terry was giving his talk before that. And to Terry's recollection, I think he said something about everybody was waiting for me to be done because everybody wanted list to listen to Brian's talk. But at the same time, Terry was sitting beside me, and he was actually writing down mathematical formulas. And I was looking at the math, and I was like, wow, this is next level when it comes to that. And I have a hard time, to be honest, reading his papers because of all the math. But to your point, it's important to be able to quantify these events, and it's also important to be able to remove the system bias, the system dependency, and all of these things.
Yes, yeah. And yeah, I would like to thank you for organizing this course. I could not participate, but I will try to come to the next one, because I did not have the chance to meet Terry Kanekin, but I read all his paper, and I have to say he's scientifically is a model for me for everything we do. And yeah. And
No, absolutely.
yeah.
We plan. Well, go
Yeah.
ahead. No, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. And understand what you say on the complexity, because when looking, for instance, at the operational model, I mean, it can look a bit overwhelming. There are many parameters, and I find it very helpful how Terry is presenting it. It's also a bit of the on the history. So starting with a model just with affinity, then you add efficacy, then there is the operational model to take into account the receptor reserve, and then when starting a bit on the history, you start with a very simple model, and then you see every time what was added, every parameter is there for a reason, to be able to fit different data. Yeah. And so I really like how he's presenting it and this succession of models. Yeah.
We will be bringing back this course with Terry potentially this year. There has been such an overwhelming interest. So we'll send out an email. You'll be able to join. And he's so he's the master. I think he's the master of all of these things. He's wonderful. All right. So last but not least, or last section of our conversation, what are the top three aha moments that you had as a scientist that shaped your trajectory?
So yeah, so I would say it's linked to the, maybe I touched a little bit on that already, but it's linked to the use of the mathematical models on GPCRs. So I mentioned already being able to predict the residence time. So this was a big thing, because it was like, okay, it works to see that it works. But then also is to, when I saw that just using these mathematical models, it's possible to make some hypothesis on the model. So when you build the model, you bring in knowledge, and you make some hypothesis. And if the model is not fitting the data, you know that it's wrong, that you need to change something. And in this process, you learn things about the biological system. So this was a very important moment to see, you use this model to learn something on the biology. And sometimes it can be very simple things which would be obvious for biology experts. But for instance, on the very first model that we made, that I did as a PhD student, the model could not fit the data because there was no amplification of the signal on the hippocampi. It's like, okay, there must be amplification. Otherwise, it just cannot fit the data. And it's like, yes, there is amplification in the cell. So you learn things while doing that. And so this was very important. And then when you learn this and you know how to control the systems and to make the drug to make it behave in a certain way. Yeah. I would say this was an important thing. Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
Any advice for junior scientists who want to, build their own company or use mathematical models and computer science and apply it to biology?
Yes, so I would say it's even if the main goal is not to use computational methods or develop AI, I would still strongly encourage to look at this mathematical model. So what, for example, Thierry Kanakin is doing with this course, because I find it very important to know this, to quantify the cellular response. It helps to interpret, understand all these different data sets. Yeah, so I find this very important. This interdisciplinarity.
I agree. I agree. And it's interesting because you mentioned interdisciplinarity. It's not compared to, I want to say, academia or the molecular pharmacology type of work or in the GPCR field. It's very being in order to have an impact and in order to use these technologies and potentially develop drugs, which we know is very difficult, you do need this interdisciplinary team. You need to be able, and people need to be able to talk to each other. Because a mathematician doesn't speak the same language as a pharmacologist, doesn't speak the same language as an MBA. But it's, I think the science is already very difficult, but an additional layer to it is being able to be interdisciplinary and then to march in the same direction, to be a marching band. I think this is a big, it's difficult, but at the same time beautiful when it comes together.
Exactly. And then when thinking more about drug discovery, so it will be for people biotech or in pharma, I think what will be very important is is combining the different data sets, so for instance linking the structure to the signaling, or combining the PK profiles of compound with the detailed pharmacodynamics. Combining this, I think this will be the important steps for drug discovery to make a difference. And for all this, interdisciplinarity is crucial. And then linking with the AI, I think on the AI, it's only the beginning. Many, many more
It
things,
is.
many more things done. And again, it's linking the chemistry to the cellular response. I don't think what is best, making a compound which is triggering this response and transferring it to in vivo system. I think on it will also be very important to have more on the primary cells on this 3D cell culture models to better link the function of the GPCR to the physiological effect.
Absolutely, because the intention is to have a drug that will go into people. So the sooner you can get it into a more relevant system, the better. All right. One question I had, which goes back to the previous ones, are you focusing on small molecules or protein therapeutics, or you're
We
agnostic of
are
that?
focusing on small molecules, and the reason is that we see an advantage with so what we do is focusing on the cellular response, identifying the best signaling profile, and then optimizing the chemistry of the compounds to trigger this. And with a small molecule, I mean, it's just going deeper in the binding pocket compared to a D-body, right? So there are more opportunities, let's say, to interact in different ways in the binding pocket of the receptor to have more diverse effects. Right? With the antibody, of course, there are many ways to do this, but it's more adapted to antagonist or to blocking this from the outside. So this is one reason why we see some. We focus on small molecules. I think everything is as its own advantages between the antibodies, the small molecules, or the peptide. Everything will have a role.
No, I agree. I agree. And I the reason I was mainly asking because you mentioned chemistry multiple times, but the other thing is I was on GPCRDB a couple of months ago, and there is this statistic where you look at the number of drugs approved, and how many, what's the percentage of small molecules, what's the percentage of peptides, antibodies, and there's other types of drugs in there, and small molecules win in this. And then again, when you think about it, there's a lot of advantages, but when you think about small molecules, it's a pill and it's not an injection. You don't have to go anywhere. You can take it and then move on and hopefully not take it forever, but I don't know, depending on the disease that you're targeting.
Yes, exactly. This is also the reason why we focus on that. That it's already available. It's also cheaper to produce, but the most importantly, it also to have these rich functions on the receptor. Eventually on different on several receptors at the same time, so we see it with that and also there are many computational chemistry tools there and the AI to be very efficient on that, so it's very good combination. It's a good time I think to do that.
No, agreed. And then just so that we have it on record, I think, well, by the time the podcast comes out, the meeting will be almost over, but you're coming to the Boston area for the GPCR's Targeted Drug Discovery Summit, which is the third edition. And I look forward to seeing you there in person, but also to listen in on your talk.
Thank you. I'm also looking forward to it.
Thank you, Aurélien. One last question. When, if and when there are jobs available at Interax, where can people find these opportunities?
Yes, so on our website, so interxbiotech.com, carry on the career section. This is where we list job openings, and it's also possible to just send us a mail because we are always looking for people, so if someone finds it interesting, it's also good to just contact us here.
Absolutely, absolutely. And then we also do have a job board, so if you have any jobs that you'd like to add to the ecosystem, more than happy to host those in the ecosystem. Fantastic. Aurélien, thank you so much for being here. I look forward to meeting you or seeing you again in person. Don't go anywhere. We're going to let people wonder what we talk about after we stop recording.
Thank you. Thank you, Yamina.
Thank you. Can I ask you for a favor? Please subscribe to our YouTube channel. Many of you come back and watch our videos but aren't subscribed. Having more subscribers will help us get you more content. Also, mark your calendars and join us in person for the inaugural Endocrine Metabolic GPCRs meeting taking place in Birmingham in the UK between April 22nd and 23rd. Thank you for joining us and listening to this Dr. GPCR podcast episode. We would like to thank our guests, our team members, Attila, Ines, Montserrat, Ivana, Andreina, and Balin. If you like our podcast, leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcast. You can also leave us a testimonial at drgpcr.com/testimonials and subscribe to our monthly newsletter today. Another way to support us is to share your favorite Dr. GPCR program with your colleagues and network. With any questions or suggestions, email us at hello@drgpcr.com. And until next time, stay safe.